Welcome to a burning fire, Jeremiah 20 and verse 9. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. Just now I wish to bring you the first of two lessons on how to keep our children faithful. The Holy Spirit guided John the Apostle to write the short epistle of 3 John to a man named Gaius, about whom reports had come to John of how Gaius walked in truth. And then John added, I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. Verse 4. Now, of course, John was speaking of those that he had taught and that he had brought to Christ. But who is not concerned about their own beloved and dear children? What people on earth would we be more interested in being faithful to God and on their way to heaven than our blessed children? Now, our lesson on how to keep children faithful, it's not to present a checklist where you do one thing, then you do a second, then you do a third, like the directions you might follow in putting a piece of equipment together. There are many elements that are involved in rearing children properly. But you do not do one thing and then set that aside and then do the next. These many elements have to be done in concert, brought along together as a combination, in proper balance, with a mixing and blending of all the pieces. It's like growth. Everything grows at the same time. Now, we have our children but a very few precious years at the longest. We soon learn that the years go by very swiftly. And very soon, before we realize it, our children reach maturity and they are gone from our daily guidance. We have but one opportunity to provide for them what is our duty to provide. And friend, if we miss that window of opportunity, it does not return. Now, God intends children to be born of parents who are married to each other. And God wants children to be reared in homes where Christ reigns supreme. You should consider the possibility of your children in the selection of the one you marry, so that your home can be one where the will of the Lord is the guiding force. Marry a Christian. How can the Lord rule when either the husband or the wife, the father or the mother, is not a child of God? A divided home in the matters of greatest importance presents a serious handicap to your children. Now, it may seem strange in a lesson that teaches how to keep your children faithful to have to admit at the very start that we cannot do it. Even God does not keep his children faithful, that is, without the cooperation of the children. And so it is with us and with our children. We cannot obey the gospel for them, nor, once they have obeyed, can we be faithful for them. They must keep themselves faithful. But we can help or we can hinder. Some are faithful in spite of their parents. And some are unfaithful in spite of godly parents. Some have been blessed to have had parents that assisted them to be faithful. But the bottom line is that each child is answerable to God for himself or herself. Proverbs 22 and verse 6 says, Train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Now, this passage places emphasis on parental responsibility in the upbringing of children, but is also frequently misunderstood to imply the entire matter rests with the parent. Friend, that is not so. The passage presents three stages in the life of the child. Two are stated explicitly, and one is implied. There is the useful stage, when the parent must train. There are the older years when the child has matured to old age and holds firm to his convictions. But there are also the middle years, years in which the child must walk the way he has been trained. And whether they do that or not is their responsibility. And this being true, to keep our children faithful, we must teach our children that they are responsible before God. Standing before the judgment seat of Christ includes them, 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 10. Giving an account includes them, Romans 14 and verse 12. They will answer for their own words, their own deeds, and they will know the consequences of them. Therefore, they must make their own decisions about living God's way. And we would not want them to have a borrowed faith, that is, believing just what they believe because somebody else believed before them. We want them to have their own deep-seated convictions that will guide them after we are gone. Otherwise, they will never be strong and stable. Having their own faith, however, does not mean having a faith that differs from our faith. When the parent follows the truth, and the child follows the truth, they will follow the same thing. But each is following the Lord for himself. It is the parent's duty to give them the basis for making their decisions, providing them the truth, and showing them the faith. Emphasizing how we must teach them to bear their own responsibility does not minimize parental duty. Ephesians 6 and verse 4, "And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord." Now this underscores an essential truth that both parent and child must accept. Children must learn that the parent is doing what God expects, and when the parent teaches, when the parent guides, when the parent disciplines and instructs the child, the parent is then doing what the parent is supposed to do. And the child must learn his parent is doing what is done in the best interest of the child. And the child must submit to that arrangement. That's God's will. Parents must launch the children on the sea of life as fully prepared as they can make them. Rearing children is somewhat like a coiled spring. When the child is born, the spring is pressed beneath the hand of the parent and under the control of the parent. And in time, the hand necessarily must be removed from the suppressed spring. Will it be removed at one bound and quickly, only to see the spring lunge in most any direction? Or will the hand be lifted slowly, and when removed, to see the spring stand just where it is supposed to stand? Friend, the time is coming when our hand will be lifted from our children. Our training time will be over, and the child will either stand or fall. So let us consider what we must do, that they must stand. We have mentioned two matters of importance already. One, select a Christian for a mate. And two, teach them personal responsibility to God. In the course of a child's life, his faith in God will be challenged. It is the duty of father and mother to teach the child about the existence of God and the evidences of his existence. He has left his footprints, friend, in nature, Romans 1 and verse 20. God is the creator, the provider, the sustainer, the judge, and he is the authority. The child must learn that God is powerful, that he is a God of love and grace and mercy. But he also must learn that God is a God of justice and of wrath and of holiness. We sing sometimes, "There's an all-seeing eye watching you." Well, God should not be presented as one who watches in order to catch someone in a fault. To be sure, he is aware of all sin. But thankfully, God watches over us as a mother watches over the child, not to find fault, not to punish, not to scold, but to protect and to provide and supply the needs. Psalm 33 and verse 18, "Behold, the eye of the Lord is upon them that fear him, upon them that hope in his mercy." Now we learn in Psalm 119 that God hates every false way. And we learn in Psalm 37 that God provides for the godly. Our children need to know of the terror of the Lord, both the goodness and the severity of God, Romans 11 and verse 22. Friend, how else will they come to respect God unless they have a knowledge of his nature? If your child learns about God, it's up to you to see that they learn it. The Jews were commanded to keep their law before their children. And our children must know of the verbal inspiration of the Scriptures. They must know concerning Christ, the Son of God. They must know the plan of salvation and the way to worship.
They must know what godly living involves. They must know about the church, the kingdom. How else will they come to know right from wrong unless they are taught? And how else will they know what God expects and what God approves and disapproves unless you teach them? That is the parental duty. We're concerned, and rightly so, about the education of our children. But education in what? Will they be educated in matters that matter most? Will they know the great biblical accounts of the servants of God, the events that have framed the scheme of redemption, and the revelation of holy and sacred things? Well, not unless parents teach them, they won't. And children need to appreciate their worth, not by some hyped-up pep talk. When I was young and played sports, my father was always supportive and encouraging to me. But he never told me that I was the best one on the field. I already knew better than that. He would have lost credibility if he'd said that to me. But he always urged me to just do the very best that I can. The child is taught self-esteem. When they are taught, they are created in the spiritual image of God. Dear listening friend, this is so serious. Herein lies the dignity of the human being and the value of the individual. Here is the basis for the sacredness of human life and personal worth. Therefore they, being distinctive from all else that God has created, know they matter. This life is not all there is to their existence. They matter to God. They matter to you because they count. Each child is worth more than all the world, Jesus said, because each is a precious soul, Matthew 16 and verse 26. This cannot be accomplished by degrading them and humiliating them and constantly finding fault with them and yelling at them. They have a quality like God. God is spirit, John 4 and verse 24. And they are spirits as well as physical bodies. Therein is the basis for their self-esteem. It's the parental duty to teach them that. And a hard fact of life is that you will not be the first perfect parent. And furthermore, you will not have perfect children. I sometimes add that that does not come until grandchildren. So to parents, I would say, ease up on yourself just a bit and try to relax. The so-called wise experts on child-rearing in our day would have you to believe that every single little matter that comes along is necessarily momentous and a life-determining situation. That is not so. There will be times when you will make mistakes, when you will say the wrong things, you will react the wrong way. But much of that will be covered when your child knows you love him, that you seek to provide for him, and that you care for him. And do not refuse to apologize, even to a child, when you've done wrong or mishandled a situation. You see, friend, parents need to learn that children are not little adults and should not be expected to act like adults any more than adults should act like children. And remember that children have feelings too. They're not to be badgered about with harsh words, cutting remarks, jerked about. You can hear some of the most awful things come from parents yelling at their children, especially at Little League ball games. How uncalled for! The little fellows must be trained, they must be corrected, they must be disciplined, but they must also be treated with respect. It's hard for them to grow from a life of idealism into a world of realism, where they learn that everyone is not good, where they learn that every policeman is not honest, where every Christian is not pure, where every teacher is not fair, where you or your mate, you are not perfect, as they at first may seem to think when they are small. Don't make it harder on them and destroy your communication with them by being overbearing and dictatorial and abusive. Respect from authority is something they must learn. They'll either learn respect for authority or they'll learn disrespect for authority. And friend, that's learned at home more than anywhere else. Parents are not just another friend to their children. They are parents. They are the authority of the home. The parents deserve respect and to be obeyed, Ephesians 6 and verse 1. Oh yes, you can be a friend and a parent at the same time, but never to the disposal of your parental position. One day I was in my truck with one of my grandsons. James had had a little run-in with some playmate and evidently retaliated somewhat, which is unlike his character. But I told him that he was to return good for evil. He looked up at me and said with some skepticism, "Well, who made that rule?" Well, I told him that that was God's rule. And then the little fella said, "Well, that makes a difference." Friend, he was showing signs of having learned to respect authority. Respect divine authority. Parents have to teach their children to respect divine authority as well as parental authority, and that's learned in the home. Deeds speak louder than words. James 2 and verse 18. Our words are drowned out sometimes by our deeds unless they're consistent with each other. One of the greatest memories a parent can give a child is a parent who was trying to live faithful to his words. Being fair, being truthful, being honest, loving, and dedicated to what is right. We only create confusion in their developing minds when they hear us say one thing, but see us do quite the opposite. And referring again to James, on that same day, a car passed us, and James asked, "Pawpaw, did you see that man in that car?" "Well, I noticed him, but not much." I asked him what caught his eye. He said, "He was smoking, and my daddy says that it's wrong to smoke." Well, I told him his daddy was absolutely correct. And then he said, "And my daddy doesn't smoke either." Now, friend, I ask you, what good would it have done for that child to be told it was wrong to smoke, but then see his daddy smoke? Another grandson was riding home from a preschool with a friend, and in the friend's grandfather's car, and the grandfather was driving, and as children sometimes just blurt out what's on their mind, Daniel said, "Your car stinks. When are you going to quit smoking?" Well, I think that's not too bad for a five-year-old. Friend, we must set the right example regarding the church. Take them to the services. Don't send them to Bible school. Take them. One little boy asked his father, "How old must I be before I can stay home from Sunday school like you?" What an example. Is it right to expect them to be what you do not even try to be? Do you know why some children have bad manners? Why they're rude? Why they use bad speech? Or show bad attitudes? You look at their parents. Do you know why some children have good manners and good speech and good attitudes? Again, look at their parents. Friend, you cannot lead where you will not go. My dad once told me I could do whatever I saw him do. That was quite a responsibility, I think, that he took on himself. But that is the responsibility of every good parent. Well, we're going to drive down a peg here in our study on how to keep our children faithful and conclude our first lesson in this matter. We're going to have a second lesson with many other things that must be included if we're going to rear our children properly. I hope the subject is of interest to you. I hope that you'll be able to hear part two of this lesson on how to keep our children faithful. This has been A Burning Fire, and your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.